And now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. And tonight's speaker comes to us originally. I met her when she was here in Visalia. She and her husband now live in Clovis, and she was kind enough to come down and tell us about her experience with the 12 steps. I've had a great experience getting to watch Mindy, and I'm very much looking forward to hearing her story tonight. So please welcome Mindy.
All right, Mindy.
Hi, my name's Mindy, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for asking me to be here tonight, Bill. I appreciate the invitation. And thank you for coming to hear my story. I've been listening to speaker CDs for the last week. I thought maybe I could hear somebody else's story that was better than mine, and I could share it with you. The problem is I can't remember very well, so I'll just have to share my story. So I grew up in a very non-dysfunctional family. If you looked at my family, you would think, why in the world is she an alcoholic? I have two amazing parents who don't drink, but alcoholism does run in my family. My mom's parents were alcoholics, and my mom was scared to death that that was going to be her path, so she chose to just never drink. For a long time, that was the path that I chose too. Growing up, I grew up in, a very loving home. I was against drinking. I never ever wanted to do anything that would get me in trouble. I wanted to always have the approval of my parents and of the people that were in my life, people that I came in contact with. And for some reason, even though I had a lot of love and I had a lot of support at home, I just never felt like I fit in. And I tried to fit in wherever I could, and I just wasn't comfortable in my own skin. I didn't like who I was, and even though I didn't start drinking until much later in life, I had a lot of alcoholic behaviors, even as a young child. I remember sneaking things when I was little. Back then it was food. I would sneak food, and I was very dishonest, as a young child. But I didn't drink for a couple reasons. One, I didn't want my parents to be disappointed in me. But two, I'm easily bribed. And my parents thought that it would be a good idea to promise each of their kids $500 if they didn't drink or smoke before they were 21. I thought, well, I'm in, you know. And so I didn't. I remember my first drink. It was on my 21st birthday, and it was the most uneventful night of my life. I couldn't wait till midnight. I was going to go to the store, and I was going to buy alcohol. They were going to card me, and it was going to be the best night of my life. And at this time, I was actually in Bible college, and drinking was frowned upon. So I snuck alcohol into my dorm room, again, with that sneaky behavior. But the worst part about it was I went to the store, and I was there right at midnight, and the cashier rang up the alcohol, and I had my ID ready, and I said, don't you want to see my ID? And they mistook me for someone else and said, no, you're in here all the time. It was very disappointing, very uneventful. So I went home, and I drank a couple of the drinks by myself, and then I threw it away, and that was pretty much my experience. I it was just nothing to write home about. And for a long time, it was like that. I would drink once in a while, but then I could go without it for a really, really long time. I met my husband, who also went to Bible college. We became youth leaders at a church. At one point, he was the assistant youth pastor sort of thing. We started having kids, and every once in a while we would drink. But my goal when I drank was always, always to get that feeling of being, like, out of control. I liked that feeling. And when I drank, even though it was maybe only once a year or twice a year, I liked to get drunk. That was just, I thought I was more funny when I was drinking. And so we started having kids, and we started getting really involved in church. And, you know, like I said, I went to Bible college, and I've always had a knowledge of God. I've never questioned whether or not there was a God. But I didn't ever think that I was good enough for that God for some reason. I didn't understand what it was to rely on Him, and I didn't understand what it was to have a relationship with Him and to depend on Him. Because in my mind, because of some things that had happened when I was younger, I just thought there was something wrong with me, and I just wasn't good enough to meet up to His standards. And so fast forward a little bit. My husband and I and our children, we have three boys, we moved to California in 2007, and when we moved here, it was my first time ever being away from home and being away from my family. And the few people in my life that I actually felt I had a connection that loved me and supported me were in Washington, aside from my husband and my kids. And so it was a really hard move on me. And in 2008, I had a major surgery, and I got addicted to prescription pain medication. And I only say that, I know that this is an AA meeting, but I say that because it really threw me into my addiction. And from 2008 until about 2011, I was heavily addicted to prescription pain medication. And my drinking was increasing. And but you know, I had standards, and I had, you know, wasn't going to drink and do drugs at the same time. That would be ridiculous. Who does that, you know? I only, you know, got prescription drugs. I didn't have a dealer, you know, those kind of things. I had standards, you know, because that was my thinking at the time, you know. And as long as I didn't mix it, I was okay. But I think it's important for you to know, because it is part of my story, that, you know, I was doing a lot of lying and a lot of sneaking around, and I did a lot of really, really bad things when I was on the drugs. I never got caught, though, by the police. I got caught by my family, but never by the police, and I'd never been in trouble with the law. And I stopped being able to get what I wanted from the medical community here in Visalia. And yeah, pretty much. And so I decided that it was much easier to get alcohol. And it is. I mean, alcohol is everywhere. And alcohol has, you know, similar effects. And it was legal. And I didn't have to lie about going and buying it at first. I actually have been in 7 rehabs. I know that's a lot, huh? In such a short period of time. The first 3 that I went to, I remember specifically when I filled out the paperwork, it was all about my drug use. It was never, I never conceded to the fact that there might be a problem with alcohol, or that when I did drink, I only drank to get drunk. I kind of hid that, and I remember sitting at the table at the first rehab that I was at with my counselor, and I remember her saying, well, just because you haven't had a problem with alcohol doesn't mean you should go out and drink. And I said, I can take it or leave it. I don't need alcohol, but I like to be able to drink it once in a while. And I remember her telling me, I think that's a big mistake. I think that you should probably not put any mind-altering chemicals into your body. And I didn't listen to her. I didn't listen to anybody that told me that. And so I kept going to rehab for the same reason. but it wasn't doing anything for me because I wasn't willing to admit to my innermost self that I had a problem with alcohol. And at that time, maybe I didn't have quite the problem that I ended up having. But anyway, so when I couldn't get the other stuff that I wanted so badly, alcohol was very accessible. And because of the surgery that I had, I was even more sensitive to alcohol than I was before. And alcohol took me down really fast. I got sober. I finally conceded to the idea that I couldn't, you know, do the other thing. And I might as well throw alcohol in there too, because my family was really struggling. I mean, my youngest son, he is amazing. I mean, all my kids are amazing, but my youngest son, he's walked in on me overdosed before when he was 6 years old. And this just tells you how sick my mind was, and that I was so selfish and self-centered in my disease that I couldn't stop for anybody. You know, and my little boy, who is autistic and sometimes doesn't always know the right thing to do, but he came home from school one day and the door was unlocked, and he came in and he found me passed out and I was unconscious and I'd overdosed. And he knew to call 911. And I remember waking up with the paramedics there, and the first thing I said was, "I'm not going to the hospital." And I was so angry that they were there, and they were at the point where they wanted to take my son away. They told me that I had two options. It was either lose my son to CPS or go to the hospital. So I chose the hospital, and it didn't take long before I was doing the same stuff over and over and over again. So I couldn't even stop for these wonderful children that I had and for all the people in my life that were begging me to stop. You know, my mom, who just doesn't understand because she's not an alcoholic, she used to call me with these little pep talks. And she'd say, "Just don't drink. Your boys just need you." You know, and I'd be like, "Oh, I didn't think of that," you know. Like, okay, I just won't do that anymore, you know. You know, and I'd do okay for a little bit, but we all know that it's not a matter of willpower, you know. I mean, I wanted to quit. Anyway, so I got sober again before all of my trouble with, you know, the law really happened. And I found a sponsor and I started working the steps, but I just hadn't really truly admitted that alcohol was a problem for me. And at first I would go to meetings and I would listen and I'd try to listen for all the similarities, because sometimes I would hear similarities, but then I started hearing just differences. And I would hear someone say, "Oh, you know, I got arrested and I got a DUI," and I thought, well, good grief, just don't drink and drive. That makes sense to me. And I'd think, well, I haven't gotten a DUI. And then I'd hear somebody else say, "Well, I lost my job. I showed up drunk at work." And I thought, who does that, you know? My former boss is here to say that I do that. Because I can say I've lost my job because of alcohol. I'm now part of the DUI club, you know. But so while I was doing this, I just wasn't admitting to myself, to deep down inside, that I could do nothing. I could do no mind-altering chemicals. And I think it was about 111 days of sobriety. And I had a job. My husband and I were doing pretty good. The boys were, you know, happy because I was sober and I was working. And I thought, you know I can't do drugs, but I've never been in trouble with the law, you know. And I think an alcoholic is somebody who drinks out of a paper bag and, you know, sleeps on a park bench and doesn't have a home and doesn't have a job. And so I thought, you know, I'm just going to have a drink. I deserve a drink. I'm not really an alcoholic. And so I had a drink. And I got pulled over that day for my first DUI. And a week later, I got my second. And in 45 days, I got arrested 8 times. And I caused a lot of damage here in Visalia. I stand here today, though, by the grace of God, I had a support system that I started to put into place when I first came into these rooms, you know, because I did get a sponsor right away. And I did go through the steps, and I didn't do them wholeheartedly, but I was willing to do some of it. And what happened was I needed to be willing to do all of it and take all of the suggestions that were given to me. And so I did half of it, and it didn't pay off very well, but I had started building a support system, and that's why I'm back here today. So I got arrested a lot of times, and every time I got arrested, you know, I was still very manipulative, very selfish. So I would manipulate my husband into picking me up, or I would manipulate him into, you know, giving me money for some reason or whatever, you know, and, you know, how we do it. And finally he'd had enough. I mean, I'd been in a couple rehabs. I kept running away from them, and he'd be driving down the street going to work, and he'd find me walking on the street with all my stuff. And I just wandered around Visalia, and when I got my DUI, I was driving one of my children. So I got a child endangerment. So there was a restraining order put in place, and that was probably one of the best things at the time that could have happened, because it caused my husband to have to choose. Do I protect my kids, or do I just keep enabling my wife? And so he had to choose, and he had to choose to not let me be at home anymore. And I know that that was not an easy choice for him. And I kept trying to get into different rehabs, and I kept thinking I was going to go to one, and I'd have people drop me off there at the wrong time, knowing that they weren't accepting people at that time. So I'd walk up the street thinking I was just going to have one drink, and then I'd end up in jail, and I'd be calling my husband from jail again. And so the last straw for him, or for me actually that day too, was I called him and asked him to pick me up from jail, and he said no. Actually he wouldn't answer his phone, so I called my son's phone, because that was that manipulation there, because I knew that he'd answer. What teenager doesn't answer the phone, you know? And so he answered, and my husband came and picked me up, and this is, some of the people in here know this story, and that's why I tell it, because it's their favorite part of my story. My husband wouldn't let me in the house, so he set up a tent in the backyard in February and made me sleep in a tent in our backyard. And it was freezing cold, and he put a mattress out there, and he put a heater out there, and he locked the door and wouldn't let me in. And he did end up letting me in the morning long enough to take a shower, and then he drove me to the Visalia Rescue Mission, and he stayed with me until they accepted me. And that began a good period of sobriety for me. I stayed at the Visalia Rescue Mission has a program there, and I went with, you know, not very willingly, but I didn't want to lose my husband and my kids. So I went, and I fought it most of the way. It actually happened to be a 9-month program, and I stayed 85 days. The judge sentenced me to 70 days in jail, and when I went in for a court review, I heard time served, and so I was out of there. I mean, I packed my bags so fast, and I went home. And for a while, things were good. You know, I was doing the program, and I was working the steps, and we moved to Clovis. And I started being dishonest. And I was just telling my husband this today. I was reading in the Big Book that oftentimes when we're alcoholics, we're not honest. But when we get sober, we learn how to be honest. But some of us find out that we actually weren't honest for a long time or ever in our life, even before we were drinking. And I think I'm in that class. I think that for a long time, before I ever started drinking, I was dishonest. And so being honest was a new way of living for me that I didn't quite know how to do. And I'm learning, and it's not always fun, but I know that if I want to stay sober, I have to stay honest. And that's where one of my downfalls was, because I came home and moved away, and I wasn't accountable to the people that I should have been accountable to, and I was dishonest. And it started with something very small. Well, I mean, it's against the law, so I guess it's not that small. But I drove. I drove my kids' places without a license, and I didn't tell anybody that I was doing it here. And that lie turned into another lie, and that turned into another lie, and I was lying to my sponsor about how many... My sponsor, by the way, is one of the most amazing people. I mean, she has stuck by me. I hear people talk about how they've had to go through a lot of sponsors and they, you know, their sponsor wasn't right for them. Or my sponsor is exactly who God wanted me to have. And I believe that with all my heart because she works the steps with me the way that I need them. She's hard on me when I need her to be hard on me. In fact, my sponsor called the cops on me when I was out drinking. And she's still my sponsor today, you know, I mean, like, yeah. But I love her for that, and I love the people in AA because I look around here and I see people in these rooms that have pulled me out of meetings when I came to meetings drunk and who have pulled me out of my car when I was driving around drunk, but yet they keep welcoming me back and they keep trying to give me more suggestions. And I think that the more I listen to those suggestions, the better chance I have of staying sober. But anyway, so after we moved to Clovis, you know, I managed, and I do say I because I wasn't relying on God, and I wasn't relying on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was relying on me. But I stayed sober a year, and that didn't work for me because Mindy in charge of Mindy's life is never a good thing. You know, but I just hadn't learned at that point how to let somebody else be in charge of my life. I didn't know how to let God guide my life. And the day after my 1 year of sobriety, I decided that maybe I wasn't an alcoholic. And so I thought I would drink. And a week later, I got my third DUI. And the cycle started all over. And, you know... I'd like to say that I wish it didn't happen. What I wish is that I wouldn't have put my family through the pain that they've been through. I do wish that. You know, I wish that my kids wouldn't have seen the things that they saw, and I wish that my husband wouldn't have had to make those choices that he had to make. But he made those choices, and I stand here today, and I'm sober, and I know how to surrender my life to God. And I know how to not rely on my own thinking because my own thinking is messed up. I mean, I had three DUIs and still couldn't see that I was an alcoholic, you know. And so I went back to rehab and I went back to the Visalia Rescue Mission. And I had an amazing director over there who knew my sponsor and who knew that I needed AA and I needed to have a better connection with my higher power. And so I went to the mission thinking that I was going to stay for 6 months because that's how long my husband told me I had to stay. And I wasn't going to stay a day longer than he told me I had to stay. And a month after I got there, I found out that my husband wanted nothing to do with me. He wanted a divorce. My kids, two of my kids weren't talking to me. And it was devastating. But, you know, it's exactly what I needed to happen because it allowed me the opportunity to totally and completely surrender and rely on God in a way that I never had done before. And so I started working the steps thoroughly with my sponsor. She came every week and met with me from the time I was there a month. And I still was, you know, I was starting to become open to the idea of maybe staying the whole time, but I couldn't let go of the idea that, you know, my husband said I only had to stay 6 months. But as I started doing the steps and doing them thoroughly and honestly, God started to work on my life. And when I was going through one of the steps, I was writing out all of the fears that I had. And one of my fears was the fear of being less than. And I realized that throughout my whole life, I was always afraid that I was less than somebody else, less than the kids at school, or less than, you know, the kids at my church, or that God saw me down here, but he saw everybody else up here for some reason. And the day that the day that I read that to my sponsor, it wasn't an audible voice, and there was no like light shining or anything, but I heard this still small voice say, "Less than who? You're afraid of being less than who?" And at that point, I realized that I had this false idea that I could never meet up to my higher power's standards or expectations. And the truth is, I had to learn that he loved me no matter what and that he had my best interest at hand. And I was willing at that point to trust him and to surrender to him. And it was the best decision that I could have made. Because at about 3 months, in the program, I started praying, "God, your will, not mine." And I didn't know exactly what that meant. My sponsor used to always tell me that it was just doing the next indicated thing. But I didn't understand always what that meant. I thought that God's will for my life or his plan for my life was just something big. Like, God's will is for you to be a teacher, or God's will is for you to be this. I didn't realize that God's will for me was to just do what needs to be done. You know, and sometimes that's just as simple as getting up, making the bed, and doing the dishes. Because sometimes oftentimes my plans don't work out the way that I think that they're going to. And so I gradually learned what God's will was for my life, and that it was to be of, you know, service to him and to my fellow human beings, you know, being of maximum service to the people that I come in contact with. And so at about 3 months, I was willing to start praying about what God's will was for my life. And for my life, God's will was for me to stay in, you know, the Visalia Rescue Mission. And it was for me to finish something. That was something else. You know, I never graduated from college. I never finished anything that I started other than high school. I was really, really good my whole life of just deciding, I think I'm going to be a travel agent and signing up for school. Or deciding, I think I want to be, you know, I want to go back to school. And my husband would come home from work and I'd be signed up for 18 credits and have $20,000 in student loans that we didn't have when he left that morning. I was really good at just making decisions without thinking about it or praying about it or asking God to direct me. And so this was a whole new thing for me to actually be directed. In the book, it talks about how, you know, we want to be the director and the actor, and, you know, we want to be in charge of the whole thing. And that was definitely me. But I didn't want to just be in charge of my life. I wanted to be in charge of your life as well. Like, I was going to tell you what God's will was for your life, too. I mean, I couldn't manage my own, but I was going to tell you what you should do. So it was a very big challenge for me to learn to surrender. And I know now, looking back, that that's why I wasn't successful before. I mean, there are so many reasons, but, you know, the dishonesty and the not being willing to admit to my innermost self that I had a problem with alcohol and that I had this disease of alcoholism. And so when I decided that I was going to stay and finish out the program at the mission, about a week later, my husband decided to let me know that God had been speaking to him too. And he told him, he said, Mindy is who I chose for you. He's like, you know, she's the wife that I picked for you, and I want you to just trust me. And he did. And he decided that he wanted to stay together and work things out. And so for the next, you know, 6 months, I would go home on the weekends, and we would learn how to, you know, connect, and I would learn how to be the kind of wife that I was, you know, designed to be, and not, you know, direct him so much. And my kids started to come around, and so it was a really rewarding experience for me to be on my own, but yet to be totally relying on God for direction in my life. And I graduated from the program in December. I stayed the whole 9 months. And I got to go home to my husband and my three boys. And I just last week celebrated 10 months of sobriety. Thank you. I'm trying really hard to do things differently, and I have this perfectionist mentality that if I can't do it perfect, then I probably shouldn't do it at all. And so I'm having to learn when I go to meetings and stuff, I'm trying to listen really carefully to what people say, especially people with really good sobriety. You know, I heard someone tell me, or someone said at a meeting that I was at, that any day that you go to bed sober, that you didn't drink that day, you may not have succeeded at other things, but you succeeded at that. And I had this idea that I had to be successful, like completely perfect at everything. And I'm not. I'm not perfect. And my plan, my aftercare plan, has gone out the window a lot of times because the computer hasn't worked, or my son was sick, or my husband was sick, or whatever. And so before, I would just throw my hands up in the air and go, well, it's not working, so I guess I can't do this. And now I've learned that the most important thing that I need to do to be successful is to not drink. Because if I'm drinking, I certainly can't be successful at anything. I can't be successful at managing, you know, anything in my home if I'm drinking. But I'm learning that idea of progress and not perfection, and that every day I can do something. And I think that's what's so important about the steps, where we take a daily inventory. We don't just look at the things that we do that are bad, you know, the things that we have to make amends for, but look at the things that we did good. And I think that that's been really helpful for me, that every day that I look at something that I did right, I know that I'm growing spiritually, and I'm progressing, and I'm starting to get better. Since I've been home, I go to a lot of meetings. I'm trying to be really honest. I'm trying not to justify bad behavior. I had an opportunity yesterday where something happened yesterday, and in the past it would have been an excuse for me to do something dishonest and illegal, and I would have justified it. And I know for me, when I start justifying those little white lies and that behavior that's maybe not acceptable in the eyes of the law, that I probably shouldn't do it, because when I'm not honest, then I get drunk. And that seems to have been my pattern. Alcoholics Anonymous has absolutely saved my life. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous have been the best thing that I could have ever done and will continue to do. I want to say, you know, this is something that was freely given to me. You know, if people in Alcoholics Anonymous weren't showing up and offering to sponsor you and offering to work with you and stuff, I wouldn't be here today. And I know that I need to give that back to other people as well, which is why I came up here tonight, because I don't feel qualified. And I'm qualified as an alcoholic, but I don't feel like I have enough sobriety to pass that on. But I know that if I share my story, then you guys, by listening to me, have helped me to stay sober today. And what I have learned is that if I do tomorrow what I did today, then I have a pretty good chance of staying sober again tomorrow. I don't do this program perfectly, but I try to do it honestly, and I try to be very willing and open to the suggestions that are given to me here in these rooms. I don't have anything else. Thank you.
I don't know if you guys see what I see, but there's something special about Mindy. I don't know what it is. She just, I'm just drawn to her. And we've been friends for a number of years. And, you know, I want to admit something. Sometimes it's scary to be friends with people like Mindy. People like me. It's scary to be friends with us because, you know, I was here, and many of you were here when Mindy went through the story she just told you. And I saw her get a year and then try to drink again. And it's heartbreaking. And you know, my instinct, my tendency is to think, you know what, I don't want to be hurt like that, so you know what, I'm just not going to open myself up. I'm not going to have relationships with people like Mindy, people like you, people like me. And you know, if I miss those opportunities to be in those relationships, I miss the joy that we got to hear tonight. And I just want to share that because I think Mindy is a delight. And I'm wonderful. I'm really happy to see her. Yeah, right? Sobriety looks very good on her. Okay, the Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and stay after the meeting to get better acquainted with our fellowship. If you're a member of our group or wish to contact a member, please be sure to see Alyssa, who maintains our phone list. Yeah. Hey, I'm excited. We have a new volunteer coordinator. Please welcome Nora to our...